6. The night was passing. Shatov was sent hither and thither, abused, called back. Marie was reduced to the most abject terror for life. She screamed that she wanted to live, that she must, and was afraid to die. "I don't want to, I don't want to," she repeated. If Arina Prohorovna had not been there, things would have gone very badly. By degrees she gained complete control of the patient, who began to obey every word, every order from her like a child. Arina Prohorovna ruled by sternness, not by kindness, but she was first-rate at her work. It began to get light. Arina Prohorovna suddenly imagined that Shatov had just run out onto the stairs to say his prayers and began laughing. Marie laughed too, spitefully, malignantly, as though such laughter relieved her. At last they drove Shatov away altogether. A damp, cold morning dawned. He pressed his face to the wall in the corner, just as he had done the evening before when Erkel came. He was trembling like a leaf, afraid to think, but his mind caught at every thought as it does in dreams. He was continually being carried away by daydreams, which snapped off short like a rotten thread. From the room came no longer groans, but awful animal cries, unendurable, incredible. He tried to stop his ears, but could not, and he fell on his knees, repeating unconsciously, "Marie, Marie." Then suddenly he heard a cry, a new cry, which made Shatov start and jump up from his knees, the cry of a baby, a weak, discordant cry. He crossed himself and rushed into the room. Arina Prohorovna held in her hands a little red, wrinkled creature, screaming and moving its little arms and legs, fearfully helpless, and looking as though it could be blown away by a puff of wind, but screaming and seeming to assert its full right to live. Marie was lying as though insensible, but a minute later she opened her eyes and bent a strange, strange look on Shatov. It was something quite new, that look. What it meant exactly he was not able to understand yet, but he had never known such a look on her face before. "Is it a boy? Is it a boy?" she asked Arina Prohorovna in an exhausted voice. "It is a boy," the latter shouted in reply as she bound up the child. When she had bound him up and was about to lay him across the bed between the two pillows, she gave him to Shatov for a minute to hold. Marie signed to him on the sly, as though afraid of Arina Prohorovna. He understood at once and brought the baby to show her. "How pretty he is," she whispered weakly with a smile. "Pooh! What does he look like?" Arina Prohorovna laughed gaily in triumph, glancing at Shatov's face. "What a funny face!" "You may be merry, Arina Prohorovna. It's a great joy." Shatov faltered, with an expression of idiotic bliss, radiant at the phrase Marie had uttered about the child. "Where does the great joy come in?" said Arina Prohorovna, good-humouredly, bustling about, clearing up, and working like a convict. "The mysterious coming of a new creature, a great and inexplicable mystery. And what a pity it is, Arina Prohorovna, that you don't understand it." Shatov spoke in an incoherent, stupefied, and ecstatic way. Something seemed to be tottering in his head and welling up from his soul apart from his own will. "There were two, and now there's a third human being, a new spirit, finished and complete, unlike the handiwork of man, a new thought and a new love. It's positively frightening, and there's nothing grander in the world." "Eh, what nonsense he talks! It's simply a further development of the organism, and there's nothing else in it, no mystery," said Arina Prohorovna, with genuine and good-humoured laughter. "If you talk like that, every fly is a mystery. But I tell you what, superfluous people ought not to be born. We must first remould everything so that they won't be superfluous, and then bring them into the world. As it is, we shall have to take him to the foundling the day after tomorrow, though that's as it should be. "I will never let him go to the foundling," Shatov pronounced resolutely, staring at the floor.
"You adopt him as your son?"
"He is my son."
"Of course, he is a Shatov. Legally, he is a Shatov. And there's no need for you to pose as a humanitarian. Men can't get on without fine words." "There, there, it's all right. But look here, my friends," she added, having finished clearing up at last. "It's time for me to go. I'll come again this morning, and again in the evening, if necessary. But now, since everything has gone off so well, I must run after my other patients. They've been expecting me long ago. I believe you got an old woman somewhere, Shatov." "An old woman is all very well, but don't you, her tender husband, desert her. Sit by her. You may be of use. Marya Ignatyevna won't drive you away, I fancy. There, there, I was only laughing."
At the gate to which Shatov accompanied her, she added to him alone, "You've given me something to laugh at for the rest of my life. I shan't charge you anything. I shall laugh at you in my sleep. I have never seen anything funnier than you last night." She went off very well satisfied. Shatov's appearance and conversation made it as clear as daylight that this man was going in for being a father and was a ninny. She ran home on purpose to tell Virginsky about it, though it was shorter and more direct to go to another patient.
"Marie, she told you not to go to sleep for a little time, though I see it's very hard for you," Shatov began timidly. "I'll sit here by the window and take care of you, shall I?"
And he sat down by the window behind the sofa, so that she could not see him. But before a minute had passed, she called him and fretfully asked him to arrange the pillow. He began arranging it. She looked angrily at the wall.
"That's not right. That's not right. What hands?"
Shatov did it again.
"Stoop down to me,"
she said wildly, trying hard not to look at him. He started, but stooped down.
"More, not so, nearer."
And suddenly her left arm was impulsively thrown round his neck, and he felt her warm, moist kiss on his forehead.
"Marie!"
Her lips were quivering. She was struggling with herself, but suddenly she raised herself and said with flashing eyes,
"Nikolai Stavrogin is a scoundrel."
And she fell back helplessly, with her face in the pillow, sobbing hysterically and tightly squeezing Shatov's hand in hers. From that moment she would not let him leave her. She insisted on his sitting by her pillow. She could not talk much, but she kept gazing at him and smiling blissfully. She seemed suddenly to have become a silly girl. Everything seemed transformed. Shatov cried like a boy, then talked of God knows what, wildly, crazily, with inspiration, kissed her hands. She listened entranced, perhaps not understanding him, but caressingly ruffling his hair with her weak hand, smoothing it and admiring it. He talked about Kirillov, of how they would now begin a new life for good, of the existence of God, of the goodness of all men. She took out the child again to gaze at it rapturously.
"Marie," he cried, as he held the child in his arms, "all the old madness, shame, and deadness is over, isn't it? Let us work hard and begin a new life. The three of us. Yes. Yes. Oh, by the way, what shall we call him, Marie?"
"What shall we call him?" she repeated with surprise, and there was a sudden look of terrible grief in her face. She clasped her hands, looked reproachfully at Shatov, and hid her face in the pillow.
"Marie, what is it?" he cried with painful alarm. "How could you? How could you? Oh, you ungrateful man!" "Marie, forgive me, Marie. I only asked you what his name should be. I don't know." "Ivan! Ivan!"
She raised her flushed and tear-stained face.
"How could you suppose we could call him by another horrible name? Marie, calm yourself. Oh, what a nervous state you are in. That's rude again, putting it down to my nerves. I bet that if I'd said his name was to be that other horrible name, you'd have agreed at once, and not have noticed it even. Oh, men! The mean, ungrateful creatures! They are all alike!"
A minute later, of course, they were reconciled. Shatov persuaded her to have a nap. She fell asleep, but still kept his hand in hers. She waked up frequently, looked at him as though afraid he would go away, and dropped to sleep again. Kirillov sent an old woman to congratulate them, as well as some hot tea, some freshly cooked cutlets, and some broth and white bread for Marya Ignatyevna. The patient sipped the broth greedily. The old woman undid the baby's wrappings and swaddled it afresh. Marie made Shatov have a cutlet, too. Time was passing. Shatov, exhausted, fell asleep himself in his chair with his head on Marie's pillow, so they were found by Arina Prohorovna, who kept her word. She waked them up gaily, asked Marie some necessary questions, examined the baby, and again forbade Shatov to leave her. Then, jesting at the happy couple, with a shade of contempt and superciliousness, she went away, as well satisfied as before. It was quite dark when Shatov waked up. He made haste to light the candle and ran for the old woman, but he had hardly begun to go down the stairs when he was struck by the sound of the soft, deliberate steps of someone coming up towards him. Erkel came in.
"Don't come in," whispered Shatov,
and impulsively seizing him by the hand, he drew him back towards the gate.
"Wait here. I'll come back directly. I'd completely forgotten you. Completely. Oh, how you brought it back."
He was in such a haste that he did not even run into Kirillov's, but only called the old woman. Marie was in despair and indignation that he could dream of leaving her alone.
"But," he cried ecstatically, "this is the very last step, and then for a new life, and we'll never, never think of the old horrors again."
He somehow appeased her, and promised to be back at 9 o'clock. He kissed her warmly, kissed the baby, and ran down quickly to Erkel. They set off together to Stavrogin's part at Skvoreshniki, where, in a secluded place at the very edge of the park where it adjoined the pinewood, he had, 18 months before, buried the printing press, which had been entrusted to him. It was a wild and deserted place, quite hidden, and at some distance from the Stavrogin's house. It was 2 or perhaps 3 miles from Filipov's house.
"Are we going to walk all the way? I'll take a cab."
"I particularly beg you not to," replied Erkel. "They insisted on that. A cabman would be a witness."
"Well, bother. I don't care. Only to make an end of it."
They walked very fast.
"Erkel, you little boy," cried Shatov. "Have you ever been happy?"
"You seem to be very happy just now," observed Erkel with curiosity.